championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser. I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. You guys should listen to the Hornscast channel. The Hornscast channel you can find anywhere for any of your Longhorn podcasting needs. Today we're going to be going over Texas winning the NIT, some spring practice notes including the injury to Gabriel Floyd, as well as Texas entering the last week of spring and who we think is going to be really good next season and who's going to be a problem. Then give you some recruiting updates as Texas got a new commit, but it's still kind of a slow start. What's behind that? Get into some lineup science, let Joe take over the show, talk about the defense and what possibilities we'll see next year, as well as baseball because Texas lost to A&M, but it's just a midweek game and they have a big season coming up against Baylor. But Joe, let's go dive right into this NIT win because it almost, literally just happened for us. And, you know, Texas, I guess, proclaiming themselves the national champions with the NIT win over Lipscomb.
Yeah, they're national champions. I think postseason tournament champions is something you can say and maybe draw a laugh, but
the other one still, sounds like we're from Texas A&M and putting up something on the
It's a little bit of a more
Southern
bolder
Big
claim
12 and, champions.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, at the very minimum, even if you're not happy at all with the way the season ended and being in the tournament, it's still a 5-game winning streak. Something to be said for that. And it was with a lot of players that will be on next year's team and flash some development that they had that we haven't really been able to see at all through the course of the year because of their limited playing time. So I don't think it's fair to call this the best Texas has played all year because it should have happened before, obviously. They're not in the tournament. They should have been in the tournament making this playing like this and trying to, you know, advance in that postseason instead of this one. But it's definitely at least a few games to build off of and, maybe springboard into next season with a lot of the experience the younger guys got.
Right. As I kind of put it in the Pretender Football show, and it does actually feel like Texas won a Texas Bowl. Like when they won the Texas Bowl, this is what this feels like. And this is kind of what this is like. And that's what I drew some parallels to in Pretend We're Football, is that winning the NIT feels like winning the Texas Bowl for this team, for this program. It's a little different context, but still it's sort of supposed to be a springboard into next season, and it's a good way to end a season. I mean, you ended off, 500 both times, and you ended off with a win and a championship and a trophy. That's great. You know, go ahead, celebrate it. You know, it's still hard to do. It's not as hard to do as, the 64 or 68 team playoff, but it's still not easy. And they had to go through, beat TCU, beat some decent teams, and they showed they actually cared, which was something you can say for Alabama or any other schools. So, good for Shaka. Good for Shaka to get this win. It's something he really needed. It's something he needed for himself. So hopefully it's a springboard into next season. I'm not going to take too much away from it now. But let's go ahead and get into what the show is really about and some Texas football here. Spring practice is going on, but we're headed into the last week of spring. But some bad news struck the team this week as DeGabriel Floyd got some results back from his MRI, and they weren't what they were hoping for. He has been held out now for the rest of spring, and they will reevaluate him through the summer and see if he is good to go for the fall camp. That's basically the timeline we're going to have with DeGabriel Floyd, where they're seeing, okay, hey, we've reported on the show, he has a herniated disc in his neck. They've been taking a look at it, and they're trying to decide, okay, what's the next route we go with here, because there was more damage than they were hoping it would be there. So we'll see what happens here, but it's still not a great thing to have for a guy who was supposed to be contending for your MAC linebacker position and honestly was supposed to be really good. We haven't seen him actually in, live play, but from all reports, from everything we've seen, he was supposed to be really good, and it sucks that, in a position you need, he's not going to be there.
Yeah, not having clarity on his future is awful, and you definitely hoping for the best for DeGabriel and that this is just a blip on the radar, and all it is just a missed spring. just kind of have to wait and see how DeGabriel and Texas and how the tests roll out from what they try to determine, and just, you know, see what his future holds after they announce it.
Yeah, and I reported this on the Football Brain X, but I'm not sure that this is a career-ending injury, as so many people are online are freaking out about it. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying that there isn't a possibility. With any injury, there's a possibility of it being career-ending, but I'm not saying that it's not going to happen, but I don't think it's going to happen here. I would imagine DeGabriel Floyd gets to play on Saturdays for the Longhorns at some point. But let's go ahead. That was the big news of the week. Well, I guess on top of Brew McCoy getting his, you know, I don't know if this is out there so much, but I guess it is now that Brew McCoy, the waiver's been sent in, and they're expecting a response soonish.
Yeah, they've seen two cases in Justin Fields and Tate Martell play out in front of them, and you know, especially since those seem to be have a lot of similarities, not 100% like for like across all three, but a lot have similarities. And both Miami and Ohio State got good news, so got to think Texas would also be feeling pretty confident. And with the fact that they're promoting him so much on social media,
right,
and, you know, telling people like, hey, come see Brew play at the spring game, it doesn't feel like that'd be somebody that they're expecting to redshirt.
Yeah, and outwardly facing, they're pretty confident. Inward facing, they're pretty confident. The family is pretty confident. Everybody around the situation is pretty confident that Brew McCoy suits up for the Longhorns and plays a game in the 2019 football season. So, you know, when it started, when it was going down, we said, hey, be optimistic that it's actually going to happen. He's going to play. I think we can continue on with the optimism here that, hey, when the NCAA does get back to him, it'll probably be some good news. But I think that is it in terms of current event stuff that happened in the past week. Let's go ahead and look forward here, because this is the last week of spring. And we've seen, what is it, 3 weeks of spring now, 4 weeks of spring? I think we have a good idea right now from what we've heard. I think the coaches have a good idea of who will be their go-to guys in the 2019 season and who might be somebody they're trying to cover up or might be a problem in the 2019 season. Joe, in your thoughts, from what you've heard, from what you've seen, who do you think will be the best players on this 2019 team? We'll go offense first.
I think offensively, it's got to be Sam Ehlinger. If he's the best player on the team, this is going to be that's how Texas gets its best team. He was often the best player on the team during 2018, kind of shared the spotlight with little Jordan Humphrey and what one did help the other do what they were able to do. But he doesn't have that. He probably has a few other targets this year that can really be weapons, including, you know, maybe using Keonta Ingram a little more in the passing game, figuring out how they're going to utilize Jordan Whittington in both the run and pass game. Sam Ehlinger is going to have a lot of options, and if he can be, you know, the best player on the team on a consistent basis, it's going to bleed over for everybody else and, you know, raise the boat for the rest of the team too.
Yeah, I think on top of knowing who their best players are going to be, I think they know one of their best options on the offensive side of the ball will be using those running backs out of the backfield in the passing game. What we saw in the last practice was actually the running backs practicing with the slot wide receiver coach Corby Meekins, running routes out of the backfield, running routes from the slot position. They're going to be out of the backfield catching balls. And what we saw in practice, I mean, I saw Keonta Ingram make some diving catches. Jordan Whittington, we know what he can be as a wide receiver. We know what he could be as a running back with the ball in his hands. So I'm not concerned with him. And even Daniel Young looked good catching the ball out there. And they were out there alongside Josh Moore. So it's going to be a real big part of the offense. But I think two other guys on top of Sam Ehlinger who will be the best players on this Texas offense will be Sam Cosmi and Colin Johnson. There is no question there. Those two guys will be undoubtedly relied on most of the time in this offense. And those two guys, if all three of those guys are clicking, this offense might be pretty hard to stop.
Yeah, exactly. I think that you may see a little bit different style of play this year, just that it's not going to be, you know, not as much control ball, I feel like. I feel they definitely want to expand on the explosive plays. We've gone over it over and over and over again, but I think the offense will look a little bit different this year because some of those plays are going to break loose with the guys they have and the options they have.
Especially, yeah. That's the one thing that they've been looking for is that speed. And they'll have that this year. I think they'll use Devin Duvernay a lot more this year. At least Sam Ellinger will be able to find him better without having little Jordan Humphrey right there. But they will have a multitude of guys out there for the wide receiver position. Brennan Eagles is starting to look really good. Malcolm Epps is a guy who he's going to be covered up by Colin Johnson at the XY position. But then there's Brew McCoy, who's also going to be that slot position alongside Josh Moore and even Jake Smith. There's going to be a multitude of weapons out there which will be able to allow Colin Johnson to breathe a little bit at times. And for Sam Cosmi, I think I'm pretty optimistic with him being one of the best players because he'll have Parker Braun next to him. It's going to be a three-man line right there. Another guy we're not talking about, Zach Shackelford, I think will have a really good year this year. Zach Shackelford, Parker Braun, and Sam Cosmi is going to be a really strong front for that left side. Now, where are the problems going to be? And I think it's pretty obvious. I am not confident in the right tackle position for Texas, and especially not confident with Denzel Okafor from what I've heard coming out of the program.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a question. This is kind of goes back to, you know, there's a lot. They're replacing three starters, of course, but, you know, one is probably going to be a two-time all-conference guy, and the other, you know, whoever's in those other two spots is going to have some experience. Denzel Okafor's played, Derek Kerstetter's played, Tope Amade, who could figure in at guard, he's the only one that really hasn't seen any time. So I'm not maybe as concerned about the right side, considering that it comes from experience. I feel like at this point, what we know is that the Texas staff is going to give Denzel Okafor every chance to be a tackle and before making the move with him for guard. He got some reps at guard last year because of how Herb Hand likes to cross train a lot of guys. Reps in practice, that is, last year because of how Herb Hand likes to cross train, and just not sure how extensive that training was. And, you know, maybe they prefer that was just a cross training thing, not something they see long term. So he's been given every chance. And if he really cannot lock down a tackle spot, then that just really proves that it's probably not going to work for him now, even after that redshirt year, and should probably move inside a little bit.
Yeah, and well, kind of walking away from that right side of the line and back to the best players, I think Cade Brewer might have a breakout season, having a year of rest after the surgery. You know, I hear what he's looking like in practice is he's, you know, and we Tom Herman even said he looks like the guy who they recruited. I thought he might have lost a step. I heard he might have lost a step, but he didn't. And I think he's a guy who might come out and really be that tight end that Tom Herman's been looking for.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Beck was very capable in the blocking game and a little bit more limited in the receiving game. Based off, you know, what we've seen from Cade Brewer, you think it'd be switched with him and, you know, he'd be a capable receiver and, you know, need to work on his blocking. With a 250-pound frame, it should improve this year. He should be able to be reputable, and I think that's why he's still obviously getting those first-team snaps ahead of Jared Wiley and Reese Lato. But he's replacing an all-conference guy, and although it was at fullback, he was still a very important contributor to the team and an important reason why the Texas offense was able to succeed in the style it did last year. So Cade Brewer, or somebody at tight end, really coming on and improving over the course of the spring would be great. Not only for their individual improvement, but also for the prospects of the team. Because, you know, although Tom Herman talked a lot about maybe throwing in some more formations and some different personnel groupings, 11 personnel is always what he's going to come back to and what he prefers in order to create the matchups on offense to get things going.
So then if you don't think the right side of the line is going to be a problem, where do you think the problem will be on that offense?
I was just praising Cade Brewer, and I think that's still a concern. I think that it's just that he's unproven, and not that I don't think anybody on the roster has an ability to do it. Other than that, I guess I'm not so much concerned, but curious about H. I mean, we saw some flashes from Josh Moore, but he got hurt last year, and you know, even though in those flashes he didn't have the biggest frame, I'm curious to see how Brew McCoy, if all goes as Texas hopes and is able to play early, if they put him at that big slot spot and see how they how he handles it. That's a kind of a unique position, I feel like, for someone his size and considering what he's done before in his career, and might take a little bit of getting used to, even though it does put him in some awesome situations for a one-on-one player. So I guess it's not so much a concern as a curiosity as to what's going to happen at slot. And that's even before Jake Smith shows up on campus and really starts to get involved in the competition and joins another player of the year in that offensive group.
Right. I'm interested to see how they do after Keyonte Ingram as well, because, you know, Danny Young is not shown that he is really great with the inside zone. I think he might step up this year, but I don't know. And then Jordan Whittington, not a running back traditionally, so he's going to take some time. But let's get to the defense side of the ball. Joe, who are the best players on this defense? Who are the guys who are going to step up and make sure this defense doesn't take a step back?
I got to think it's going to be Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones. When you have this caliber of safety that Texas does, the guys at the top really make it work, and especially in the two spots they have in those field and free safeties, or field and boundary safety spots, they're going to be responsible for getting, you know, a lot of guys maybe playing some new positions or playing extended time for the first time lined up. Jeffrey McCulloch's experience, but Rover hasn't been a place he's stuck at the past few years. Your Mac linebacker is probably going to be someone who hasn't seen a lot of playing time. They're going to be responsible for a lot of what's going on in front of them, and I think they'll be able to handle it very well, especially after we saw what we saw from them last year. Caden Stearns has to play better than, you know, the back half of the year, and that could have had a little bit to do with, you know, being dinged up and being a true freshman. But you know, if he can replicate that first portion of the season, and Brandon Jones can be what he was last year, that Texas is going to be fine at the safety position, at least in the two traditional roles.
Right.
And I really feel like since they're the two most proven guys and one of the few returners on that defense, it kind of pencils those two guys into the spot.
Right. And I wonder if they can be guys who can cover up problems from the cornerbacks or from the linebackers. That will be interesting to see if that's something they could be so good at what they're doing that they make up for the mistakes. Where I think Texas could cover up some of the mistakes, and which why I'm going to say these guys might be the best players on the team coming to the next year, Joseph Osai and Malcolm Roach. Malcolm Roach, I think, might be one of the best players on this team because of what he's shown in the past. 2 years ago, when he was on the defensive line, he was explosive. He was disruptive. He was really good. And then they tried to be too cute with him and use him as a linebacker and try to say, okay, hey, you can be a B-backer because you are so athletic you can go backwards as well. It was okay. But as soon as they got him back on the defensive line, he started to really pick it back up again, but then he got a foot injury. So I'm expecting him to really take another step up and be the guy that is the guy on the defense and really covering up for maybe some of the deficiencies at linebacker and giving that defensive line some explosion that Texas lacked last year. And then Joseph Osai on the outside giving Texas some of the pass rush that they lacked last year, some of the athleticism on the outside, kind of being like what they had in Nashawn Hughes, but actually effective. So I'm expecting that of those two guys, and obviously Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones as well. The safety position is just absolutely loaded. And maybe even the nickel position might be something that's interestingly solved if B.J. Foster can hold that down, because I think he's so athletic and so has the ability to do everything that that position needs that he might prove to be a key piece to this defense next year. But Joe, where do you think the problems will be this defense? Who's going to be the guy who needs to be covered up?
I'm just going to keep pounding the corner drum. I haven't stepped off the fact that that's my biggest concern going into this year. I'm going to continue to pound this drum over and over. I know that there are talented options with Anthony Cook and Jalen Green, Kenyatta Watson, half early enrolling, kind of, sort of, and being there, Kobe Boyce, Deshaun Jameson. I'm just concerned because although those guys are all extremely talented, they're all very unproven in a passing league with some great wide receivers. So, and even in their limited time last year for all those guys, save Jameson and Watson, since they didn't play a snap on defense last year, didn't see a whole lot to really encourage me. Jalen Green was extremely limited in corner snaps, but there were times when, you know, when Cook and Boyce were playing, where there were, I was very, very concerned with their ability to, you know, stay on Oklahoma State's best receivers. That's the example that sticks out most. So I know Tylan Wallace is great, but there's a lot of great receivers, and they're going to try and pick on young corners, and then until they prove, like, you can't pick on us anymore.
No, I agree. I mean, the Big 12 is a passing league. But here's why I'm going to say the linebackers. And he, obviously, those are the two biggest questions of the team. So, obviously, you're picking cornerbacks. I'll pick linebackers. But the defensive philosophy for Texas is stop the run first. One of the most important positions to this defense, and why Todd Orlando coaches the linebackers, is the linebacker position. They are crucial for this defense. And we saw how crucial they were for this defense when Anthony Wheeler would make the incorrect call, and then all of a sudden there's a huge play in the run game. If Texas can't stop the run, then they're going to have a lot of trouble for the rest of the year, because teams are going to get their passing games, but if you can't stop the run, then you're screwed everywhere. So I think the guy who you're probably going to have to try to cover up somehow, some way, is going to be either Ayodele Adeoye or Caleb Johnson. And I'm not saying that because I don't, you know, I think that they're going to be bad, but I don't think they're going to be good enough to be able to be immediately hole-filling guys. There was a huge hole in that Mac linebacker, and I don't think that they are either, that either of them are huge upgrades over what we had last year. So that's why I'm going to say the linebacker position is something I'm thinking they're going to have to get creative around and figure out how they use that position and cover up some of the disadvantages of this team.
Right. Last year you had experienced guys, and sometimes they were limited, but this year you have inexperienced guys that you really think should be able to athletically get things done, but it's a tough league to be inexperienced in, at least in, you know, very long stretches of middle linebacking play. So
right.
It's hard to cover up is the problem. Especially when there are only two and they're in the middle of the field. So we'll see how those battles shake out and what it looks like come fall.
I think the way we can break down this defense and compare it to last year is, last year there was a high floor but a low ceiling on the defense. This year there is a low floor on the defense but a very high ceiling given the players. A lot more possible talent but a lot more questions behind that talent. So let's go ahead and get to the next part of our show, which is recruiting. With Texas getting a new commit in Jaden Holaby, the running back, 6'2", running back out of Bishop Dunn in Dallas. The dude is just a rumbling, tumbling, 200-pound running back. Joe, what will be his potential part in this offense when he gets to Texas?
Well, I think it's going to be some sort of extra constraint in Tom Herman's offense, kind of in the other offenses would call it a H-back role. At Texas, it's a Y. Usually that's a tight end, but this is a guy who maybe you could sub in for a package and get some more athleticism on the field, and a guy, like I said, who operates as an extra constraint in the passing game. An idea that came to my mind is basically, if this guy is Chris Warren with want to, that'll be pretty good for Texas. Chris Warren looked all right as an H-back in the few games he played it. I don't think that's where his heart was. And so I think you saw a little bit of that play out in his play, I guess. Is that the right word? This is a guy that helps you get a little bit into the Bishop Dunn family, a place you haven't been able to get into very recently. And B, like I mentioned, gives you that constraint. You don't have to really search out possibly for a true tight end take in this class if one doesn't fall your way because of someone like Holaby. And it gives you a real athletic option to start with for not a glamour position, and could turn it into something special, at least in the boundaries of the offense.
Right. I think you nailed it. He's a very athletic, skilled blocker. I think that's going to be the main thing he is asked to do in this offense, is be a fullback, the blocking guy, the guy who is the lead blocker, professional lead blocker of the Texas Longhorns, will be Jaden Holaby's path. And if he does show to be, you know, it's difficult to say that, because in his film, he does look very athletic. He's able to shake off a bunch of guys when he gets the ball. I'm sure if you get the ball in his hands occasionally, he can be a guy who's like, who's the guy from Oklahoma? you're talking about?
Dimitri Flowers.
Dimitri Flowers. A guy like Dimitri Flowers from Oklahoma who will surprise you with his athleticism out of the backfield when he's supposed to be the guy who's be your blocker. But at the same time, I don't know if he's going to give you something like what you were surprised to get out of Deontay Foreman or Chris Warren. I was talking to Joe before the show, and I was like, he's really suited for like a veer and shoot offense where he can just bully guys up the middle with the entire offense super spread out. If he can run over one guy, he's good to go, but he's not going to burst out with speed. So I think, right, if you get some more weight on him, if you can get, 10, 20 more pounds on him, he's a guy who can be a defensive end headhunter and get you that edge for your running backs, a guy like Jordan Whittington to get the edge and burst. So Texas gets that commit. It's I don't know how much momentum that really gives them. They really weren't beating out anybody big for him. But Longhorn fans have sort of brought up that Texas is off to a slower start than normal, or what seems like a slower start than normal. And it's been thrown out there that the reason behind the slow recruiting start is because of in-state recruiting tensions. Joe, what do you think about that theory behind a possible slow start for this recruiting class? Is it even a slow start?
See, I don't know if it's a slow start, as it compares to years past, because even though this is the 2020 class is at front and center, it still is only 2 months into a lot of their recruitments. A lot of the focus being shifted onto them. It's still a little bit early for them. Also, Texas has only had. They had a large recruiting event at the very, very beginning of it, another big recruiting event at the beginning. And now the spring game is, the first big recruiting event, at least for Texas, in a month and a half. I think it's a good chance that there will be some momentum coming out of this event, whether that's in the form of commitments or not, kind of to be determined. But I think you'll see a little, maybe some more guys jump in the boat and, maybe this slow tag taken off of this recruiting cycle after the spring game, just because we haven't had a landmark like that in so long, at least in the recruiting world.
Right. And that spring game will be interesting to see who shows up. That will actually be a big story, is who shows up to the spring game, because a lot of guys are going to A&M and then traveling down to Austin for the spring game. We'll see who actually makes it for that game, because I'm sure the A&M coaching staff is going to be like, no, here, we'll keep you here as long as we can to make sure you can't get to Austin, or you are way too tired to go to Austin. But it's interesting that I think there is something to the fact that it's a little slow because of in-state recruiting tensions. Because there's a lot of position battles out there which are actually down to the line, which actually probably shouldn't be, like Alfred Collins, where he's either a slam dunk or he is not. I don't know. It's either a coin flip or a slam dunk. I can't tell. Or a guy like Princely Umanyelen, who at one point was all Texas and the other point sounds like he's going to A&M, and it just doesn't really add up. And, Oklahoma with Prince Dorba and Texas, it's just... there's a lot of recruiting battles out there that have just been kind of tying up guys in their decisions. Now, I think a lot of these deadlocks will come undone right after the spring games. Right now, a lot of these coaching staffs are focusing on getting their spring practices done, making sure that their actual job is getting done with coaching their team. And then afterwards, with the official visits, with more time on their hands, after they're going around visiting different schools for their spring practices, I think you're going to see a lot more movements in the recruiting game, because it's actually been a little quiet besides guys like Troy Omere showing up to Austin, a few different guys showing up for spring games and, some hints of momentum here or there. I think you're really going to get a tidal wave of news and notes and whatever after the spring games and once the official visits start. But again, I don't know if it's actually a slow start, because Texas has 5 commits already. It's been pretty fast, actually.
Yeah, and they've had 6 commitments total. One just jumped, backed off of his commitment. Yeah. So I think they're in a good spot. I think the other thing you have to realize is, although you're lacking at a lot of positions, there's one position you're definitely not lacking at, two, I guess you could say, and that's quarterback and offensive line, and that's very important. That's a good base to start your class with in order to encourage other guys to jump in, you know, show off the guy who will be getting you the ball, or show off the guy who will be protecting you, opening lanes for you. Good infrastructure to start a class with.
And Texas is in a good position with a lot of guys. It's going to be closing it over these next few months. That's going to be the key, is closing. So let's go ahead and get to the next part. Joe, this is your part of the show right here. Lineup science. Go ahead and throw it at me. Let's talk some defense.
Okay, so last week we did a lot of, you know, formation sciences, you know, like we mentioned, and threw a lot of guys out on defense, on offense, and in different spots and how it looked. And this week, even Tom Herman explained a little bit about, you know, installing those different formations. Now, I was thinking about how to do this on defense, and as weird as it is, the rules on defense are a little bit more rigid. You want this team's always going to have three down linemen. It's always going to have, you know, two linebackers. And it's always going to have two corners and two safeties. It's just kind of what those other two positions are going to be. So I'm just going to toss a starting lineup out there. You've got to, you know, see what I want to hear what you like and hear what you don't like about it. So okay. I feel like we can kind of ignore defensive line at this point because, although they are replacing three starters, that is a place that. The battles don't seem super intriguing there, I guess. You got Malcolm Roach, who's got a spot. Nose is going to be one of two players, and you kind of know what you're going to get. And the other end spot is going to belong to Taquan Graham, most likely. So it's just one of those things where there's always going to be three, and in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter, at least for this talk, who those players are. Now, everybody behind them depends on the spot. So let's start talking about the back eight. And I'll go at corner. We'll have Anthony Cook and Kobe Boyce. Kind of seems to be the lineup you can pencil in, but there's been some erasers taken to those names, at least to Boyce's a couple times. Jalen Green, Deshaun Jameson have put in good camps and or good springs and are getting opportunities. So the intrigue's not really in corner. Yeah, you're going to want to know who's there, but that's always spots that are static and on the field. What really gets interesting is how do you really want to develop and use all this safety talent you have available, in addition to trying to keep the guy who you said could be the best player on the defense this year on the field. So let's go at linebacker. We've got Joseph Osai at B linebacker. For right now, let's say Ayodele Adeoye is your middle linebacker, and Jeffrey McCullough is the rover. Kind of conventional, you know, what they really want. On the field in those spots. Your nickel, however, is going to be Josh Thompson. Your free safety is Caden Stearns, and your boundary safety is Brandon Jones. Obviously, that is missing a really good player. What do you think of that lineup?
No BJ Foster in there?
Yeah.
If I was comfortable with Josh Thompson, that sounds like a pretty base defense right there, where you are expecting, you know, it's kind of nickel. It kind of protects the run by having guys in there who are run stoppers like Deli, like McCullough, like Osai, like your front line, and also gives you some flexibility in the passing game with having guys who are supposed to be good in coverage like Josh Thompson and your safeties and corners. So I feel like it's a pretty versatile setup, but let me go ahead and throw this one out at you, and I don't know if you have this in your notes, but some way you could play around with the personnel and keep Osai on the field would be you have the same sort of setup with your defensive line, you have the same setup with your corners and your safeties up top, but instead of having Ayodele as your mic, you take him off the field. You push Jeffrey McCullough over there, and you split out the rover out wide into sort of a nickel position where you have BJ Foster take that over or a guy like Overshown take it over. So you have sort of a hybrid safety linebacker position out there. And then your corner, and then your nickelback on the other side is either BJ or Josh Thompson.
Okay. I think with that, I think that's a lot of work for something you don't really need to do. I think you can just, instead of sliding people from Mac to Rover or anything like that, depending on the alignment, the Mac is always to the field, and he's the guy that gets matched up on in passing situations, and offenses try to take advantage of it. So I'd keep McCulloch at Rover, just so he's able to still do his, you know, the insert blitzes and slice through the slice into the defensive backfield like a Rover's supposed to do. But you can go ahead and put BJ Foster at Mac, since, you know, when things are open up to the field, that Mac linebacker often gets coverage responsibilities. So I don't think there's really any need to switch the positions up that much. I think you can really, in that passing situation, put somebody like Foster at Mac, and, you know, do the work from there. However, then teams that have the ability to would try to focus in back in on inside the line of scrimmage or inside the tackles, and, you know, really try and make BJ Foster work at it, and filling run lanes from the Mac spots, maybe not something he's super familiar with. He's probably done it some at Joker, but it's probably a little bit different rules at Mac. So I think that's a really good idea, especially considering the problems that Texas had in coverage at Mac last year. And I think obviously BJ Foster is a good candidate in that hypothetical spot. I think I would put him at nickel, and then possibly have DeMarvion Overshone play this hypothetical coverage Mac that you're talking about.
It'd be a dime defense look here, where instead of having two extra cornerbacks, you have two extra safeties down there who are glorified linebackers or glorified safeties, but really playing the position of linebacker. I feel like that's hybrid enough, that's versatile enough to really take a kind of gives offense a different look. And I don't really know how it look. It just is an interesting concept to me to have that. Something that's I feel like you could play around with. But, Joe, do you have another lineup for me?
So the other lineup I've got is the dime lineup. It's got, you know, three down linemen, Anthony Cook, the opposite corner. And then it's going to be the typical dime look. It's going to be your nickel back, whether it be Josh Thompson or BJ Foster. Caden Stearns at free safety, Brandon Jones at boundary safety, and then DeMarvion Overshone playing Joker.
Okay, so him being that's kind of reminds me of quarters. So you're saying BJ Foster is your nickel?
Yes.
Okay, so that's another sort of formation way to use that personnel grouping, and I agree. I think that's actually something you might see during the season.
Yeah, that seems like definitely their most conventional.
But then you're taking Osai off the field. That's your lightning package.
Exactly. That's the big problem. So basically, it's how do you keep Osai and Overshone and Stearns and Foster and Jones all on the field at the same time? And I really hate to say that the laboratory has yet to determine a way to do that yet.
The legal pad hasn't come up with an answer.
Is this just going to be a problem that Texas is going to have, that, you know, when they want to go dime or when they want to go nickel, that it just may so happen that DeMarvion Overshone doesn't see the field at the same time as Joseph Osai?
Right, which is why I think the one middle linebacker solution, but having the guys who, again, kind of linebackers with Overshone and BJ Foster playing the guys next to him, is an idea that I like, which you can keep Osai on the field. But then again, that's kind of susceptible to running. But I'm sort of arguing with myself here. But again, then BJ Foster is really good at run stopping, and so is Overshone. But then if you have a really big guy, you're going to be outsized there, and depend, you know, it's the same problem they had when they were going lightning against Oklahoma State last year, and Oklahoma State brought an extra blocker into the picture, and they just overran Texas. It's going to be a huge game of chess, but one of the major problems we came into the spring practice season with is how to use Overshone. It's still a question mark. I don't think they figured it out. I don't think we figured it out. It's going to be interesting to see how they figure it out.
Right. I agree completely. And that's basically the biggest, how do we figure this out, you know, that Texas has that isn't replacing a senior in this offseason.
Right. So you got another one for me? Is that it?
That's really it. I mean, I know that that's the three main formation science possibilities and the three main questions right now. But as opposed to where on offense, it's basically like, okay, let's mix and match all this. The roles on defense are still kind of clearly defined, at least for Texas right now. We haven't gotten into positionless football quite yet. So it's a little bit tougher to create these formations, but I think that last question is definitely the major question for Texas's defense this year as far as utilizing personnel is, well, how do you keep, you know, in the situations that demand it, how do you put the people you consider your best players all on the field at one time without having to lose one of them?
Well, here's an idea, and this is a third and long situation type of package. You have Osai, you go lightning package, and Osai becomes a defensive end, and you take off Wilbon or Keyonjay Coburn at nose tackle. You move over Malcolm Roach into that nose tackle position, and you move the Marvion Overshown or B.J. Foster into the joker position. And that's your lightning package. And I feel like that might be a lot more effective than what they had last year at lightning for third and long, which was a huge issue for the Longhorns last year.
I think that's a great point. That's definitely an area that they need to improve on. And, you know, if they want to improve on it, keeping their best pass rusher on the field may be a big part of it.
So then what about goal line situations? Who is on your defensive line for that goal line situation?
I don't think you change a whole lot. I think you feel very comfortable with a front three of Roach and I guess Coburn or Wilbon and Graham. I think there's definitely a big possibility that that's where they turn that into a four down. They bring in an extra big guy. You know, maybe have Wilbon and Coburn on the field at the same time. Not exactly sure what they would decide to do. I think definitely in goal line, you'll see a fourth linebacker come on the field, and I think that's kind of a fun thing. The Texas doesn't have the opportunity to break out the true 3-4 as often as some other teams in other conferences, and I think that'd be a fun formation to see Byron Vaughns and Joseph Osai on the field at the same time in a goal line situation, but I think 3-4 won't be the goal line set. It'll be saved for more running offenses and offenses that use 12 personnel. And I think they'll just bring in a fourth lineman, fourth big guy to really help out up front.
All right. Let's go ahead, though, and move on to baseball. Because baseball recently, they had an interesting series against Xavier where they won 6-5, I believe, all three games. Two of them were walk-offs. Then they lost to A&M, and that was just an embarrassing loss. And Joe, you said it wasn't unexpected, but still, the way they lost and Cam Fields coming in and again messing up, it just seems like this team's bullpen has cost them so many games this year.
Yeah, that they've been riding or dying with a bullpen composed mostly of sophomores and freshmen, and it's been a lot of dying. This team knows that they're not playing their best baseball. Michael McCann admitted it in a press conference today. Even David Pierce said this team's best baseball is ahead of it, and they've just got to stop giving games away. And it kind of shows to me that they've definitely – it's not like they don't know what the problem is. They know what the problem is, but, you know, repeating it over and over and over again can only do so much. It's one of those things that the players definitely have to work themselves out of. And I think the fact that the schedule kind of normalizes is going to help them out a lot. You know, there's still going to be tough games in the Big 12, especially with Baylor this upcoming weekend. But it's going to be a lot more consistent. It's going to be that regional school that you should be able to beat before you get into a weekend Big 12 series. There's no more A&Ms. There's no more Arkansas's coming in for midweeks. You're getting, you know, decent quality midweek teams games you can win, games that you can help bolster your schedule, and then you can go into the weekend riding that momentum from those wins. But like you mentioned at the start, the bullpen has to improve. I really think that if there's only one thing Texas could fix, I feel like it'd have to be the bullpen. Defense and hitting still has a lot of issues, but I feel like that's a little bit easier to clean up over the course of a season than pitching is, especially with a lot of young guys. So I think it's possible. I still think this team is more likely to end up in the are they hosting conversation than the are they even going to make it conversation. But there's a lot of flaws on this team, and it's the halfway point of the year. Some of them they've got to be figured out soon, or else the ceiling of this team is much more limited than I expected.
Well, is losing at A&M, and this might be an ignorant question, but is losing to A&M, how's that going to affect Texas's chances at hosting a regional versus, you know, a team like TCU or Texas Tech or Texas A&M and maybe even Baylor?
Losing a game that would have boosted your RPI, would have looked good on your resume, obviously not a positive. I think Texas can really determine its own fate as far as hosting with what it does in the Big 12. I think we learned last year that the committee is very unlikely to not give a power conference champion a regional host. And that's still on the table this year. They're 3-3. They've only played two series. There's plenty of opportunities, and going back over the years, if you win 2/3 of your conference games, if you just literally win 2 out of 3 in every conference series, you have a really, really high likelihood of winning the Big 12 conference. And there's been a few outliers over the years, but if you just win 2 of 3, you can do it. And I think Texas still has that capability. I believe David Pierce when he says this team's baseball is ahead of it. It's just that they're running out of time to coax that best baseball out. There hasn't been a ton of signs of it quite yet, but there have been signs of it considering they've swept TCU and played some really good teams this year.
LSU.
So I think as the schedule kind of normalizes and eases up just a little bit, you may see what this team's really capable of instead of viewing it through the lens of the difficult furnace that it went through. But they got to do it. Time is not a commodity that they have a ton of right now.
Right. And what they're going to have to do to really make sure that they even have a chance at winning the Big 12 is looking better on the road. I was talking with Mark Pena, part of Occupy Left Field, and he was telling me Texas just hasn't looked good on the road. And you can look at TCU, you can look at Incarnate Word, you can look even at Stanford. Texas just hasn't had the same fire on the road that they have at home. And we're going to Baylor this weekend. It's a huge series because Baylor is another team that, hey, might have a chance at winning the Big 12. Having lost to TCU, not a great thing, but if they can take it to Baylor, they can win that series, and that's going to help them out tremendously. What do you think about this Baylor team, and what is going to be the biggest part of the series for the Longhorns?
Yeah, this Baylor team's good. I don't think they're going to sneak up on people like they did last year. I think they're one of the teams picked to be at the top of the Big 12 this year by the coaches. So this is a really solid team, especially with a talent like Shea Langeliers behind the plate for them. So what Texas really needs to do is what it's failed to do all year, is play clean games. They really have not played clean games from top to bottom. That means getting bunts down, making contact with runners on, not committing errors, and just throwing strikes. And once Texas starts playing clean baseball, which they, like I mentioned, have not been able to do consistently, that's when they'll start to be a good team. And I think that if they can do it against Baylor, that can show that they really should be able to do it against anybody.
Right. And it's not that they haven't shown the ability to do that this year. It's that they have one or two innings a game where it just all falls apart. It was the second inning of the Texas A&M game where they had 2 home runs and 4 points. They put up a 4. It's been, for Stanford, they had a few bad innings. For Texas Tech, they had a few bad innings. For TCU, they had a few bad innings, and all of them led to a loss. If Texas can have, if Texas can hold off on those bad innings where they just fall apart for 15 minutes, then I think they can get into Waco and out of Waco unscathed or relatively unscathed. And Baylor, for Baylor, this is going to be the best series they played this entire year. And the second, you know, I don't want to say second best, but maybe one of the best teams they have faced this year, aside from Texas A&M. They haven't really played, you know, Holy Cross, Texas State, Cornell, Dallas Baptist, which is a decent school, Rice, Texas State, Nebraska, Abilene Christian, Cal Poly, Sam Houston State, West Virginia, Texas Southern, Kansas. None of those teams really are powerhouses. You know, Dallas Baptist, right, maybe, and Texas A&M, maybe the two best teams in the baseball world that they've faced. But this is going to be the first full series that they have faced a top 25 team for 3 days in a row. It's going to be their first big challenge, and let's see how they deal with it. If they can actually take on Texas, which I wouldn't be surprised if they do, and I wouldn't be surprised if they don't. It's going to be interesting to see how Texas takes it on, because this actually is a breath of fresh air for them. It's going to be interesting to see how Texas finally does, if Texas can do better away from the dish.
Completely agree. If they want to start to prove it, they got to do it on the road, and that'll be a good start to carry, good way to carry it over to the home series after that.
Right. And I think that's going to do it for us here, y'all. It's a shorter show than usual, but that's going to do it for us. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. And Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on InsideTexas.com. You can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
Or you guys can find both of us at the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere you can find a podcast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.